Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. Here we are every Sunday from 7 a.m. and p.m., as well as Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we're streaming live, as it were, at 7 a.m. and p.m. on Sundays and 1 a.m. on Mondays. We're streaming on richarddugan.com and newspress.com. So check us out, if you would, please. We link to our guests. We encourage you to link to them as well. Check out the information they have to offer. We encourage you to do that. Today, we're going to turn on the switch. We're going to turn on the power. We're going to turn on the lights, as it were, and we're going to talk about how you can reconnect your heart, you can rewire your brain, and you can remix your world with my guest, the author of Switch On, How to Ignite Your Creative Spirit with the New Science of Breakthrough. Nick Seneca Jankel is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hi, Richard. Great to be here.
When we start talking about the whole aspect, and we do this on a regular basis on this program, talking about finding our life's purpose and living on purpose and so on and so on and so on, it's one of those things that for some, it kind of gets old only from the standpoint that, and I put it in that context, only from the standpoint that it's like, well, why is this so difficult? Why am I having so much trouble? I hear this from people. How do I find out what my life's purpose is? How do I get ignited? How do I get this whole process started? So we're going to start from there. We'll go backwards a little bit in a little while to talk more about you and how you became kickstarted. But can you help those of us who don't think we found our purpose?
Well, I think that one of the challenges is to really understand what purpose is. And I think a lot of people assume it's a big goal, it's a huge change the world vision. And I believe purpose is actually much closer to home. And really, it's about who we are when we are most loving, most loved, most free from the past, most in the moment, most in our element. And yet, that in itself does present us with challenges, because often we've forgotten who that is. We've become conditioned with all these different habits and thoughts and beliefs to fit in and become part of civilization and society. And so peeling back those layers to really understand what can we bring to every moment, not just a big career goal or something, every moment of our lives in the line for a taco or in a meeting at work, what can we bring that's particularly to do with us? What's our special source, if you like?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing so the first thing is to realize it's not about finding your big career goal, although of course purpose does fuel our crazy wild dreams for a better world. But it's not that. And I think that's the most important thing. The other thing that then challenges people is, okay, so that's well and good. But often when we do discover our purpose and find it and understand it, it's often quite inconvenient. And it often means we might have to give up some of the things that are most comfortable about our life. And that's, I think, where a lot of people get to. I think they kind of sense or intuit where they're really meant to be in their daily experience, but to actually act on that intuition means possibly giving up money, fame, reputation, an easy job title, those kind of things.
Well, and of course, we've even talked with people who have actually done that. I mean, they've actually walked away from their job, and in some instances, even their family and friends and so forth, because those relationships weren't serving them in terms of this nagging, gnawing desire that they felt inside that they needed to go this other direction. I mean, we just talked with a woman here in Santa Barbara who spent 6 years traveling the world to different places, thinking that it was only going to be a year. I mean, this was her original plan, was 1 year, ended up being six. But she sold everything she owned. She quit the very successful job that she had, and she just went. And maybe those are rare cases, but I have to wonder, maybe those are becoming more common than not, because people are starting to get to the point where they're saying, I've just had enough of this surviving. And you use a very unique, I think it's a very appropriate word, and I'm trying to use it more and more often. Instead of just surviving, we want to thrive in our lives.
Absolutely. I think there's like almost like a rash of an epidemic of people realizing their whatever age they are often happens in our late 20s upwards to whatever age we get to when we're like, you know what, this kind of comfort with our discomfort just isn't doing it. And there's definitely more. And giving ourselves that space to go and explore what that is, whether it's taking a sabbatical or going away. I'm a little less drastic than, you know, give up everything you've done and go. I think you can bring your purpose into every area of your life. And one of the exercises I like doing in workshops is, you know, whatever the worst parts of your life are, the sort of duties and chores you loathe. If you now you've got your purpose, what could you bring to those moments that create more meaning from them, that allow you to relax into them and maybe even enjoy them? I'm not an advocate of saying, you know, jump up and leave, but I do believe that without finding our purpose, it's almost impossible to thrive. I think it's actually like that kind of clear. Certainly my own experience of having pretty much everything a man could want at a very early age, in my late 20s, but the one thing I didn't have was my purpose, and realizing how just brokenhearted I was pretty much the whole time, you know, makes me believe that. And one of the things that I sort of say is, you don't get to choose what your purpose is, but you do get to choose what you do with it. And that's a really important sort of thing to realize is, you know, your purpose is just a combination of your genes, your experiences, your innate archetype of person, everything that's happened to you. So you don't get to choose all that. But at some point, when you start to feel this this gap between your life and the surviving and the thriving, that's the time when you do get to choose. And you get to choose whether you even go into the question of your purpose, and then every day for the rest of your life, whether you follow that, whether you're on purpose or you're off purpose. And your wisdom, your inherent, you know, biology will tell you very clearly when you're on purpose and when you're off purpose.
You know, it's an interesting distinction you make, because we've dealt in the past year and even before that, we were doing a series of programs on mythology, and we went into an area dealing with the subject of science fiction and mythology. And of course, I've been observing, for example, one of our modern day, I'll call it our modern day mythological stories, is Star Trek. And I'm so thankful Gene Roddenberry came up with the concept. And I would be watching the Next Generation series from that perspective as mythology. And one of the characters, and this ties into what you were just talking about, one of the characters actually was a protagonist. But we'll call it the structure of that protagonist, and you'll understand why I use that word in a moment, was the Borg, that was made up of individuals who were getting information via a main source. And at the time, we did not know where it was coming from, but they were getting this information and they were carrying out their individual and unique tasks. But those unique tasks were all tied into the big picture, which they were totally unaware of. Well, there's a correlation between that mythological story and our spiritual lives, listening to that still small voice and listening to it and following those promptings. You and I, we get different tasks, but hopefully we're about the same task of bringing about a better world for ourselves and all others.
Absolutely. For me, people say, what is purpose? And I've even started using this same statement in organizations, which is a little risque, is purpose is love in action. And so it's usually something to do with teaching, transforming, healing, creating, empowering, enlightening, freeing, those kind of things. It's usually to do with that kind of stuff, which inevitably are about helping us thrive and our world thrive. And so its purpose is not about making $1 million. Definitely not. Although you can make $1 million with your purpose. There's nothing wrong with that. But I love what you just said. It reminds me of obviously bee and ant colonies and social insects. But also another metaphor is the orchestra, in that on our own, the flute, the trumpet, the violin are beautiful and wonderful. But when we're together, all virtuosies of our own being, all have been cleared away, all the stuff that stops us living our purpose, all the fears and the shoulds and the oughts and the worries, and we're all playing our own instrument, if you like, the symphony of that is incredible. I mean, it's insane. And I think that's what's on offer. And particularly now when we've got the internet and all these ways to connect and contribute across time and space, Skype, to be able to vibrate and resonate with our own purpose and then attract other people who are, and then over time, see what that symphony is. It's one of the great sort of mysteries and marvels of our age.
Well, this is very interesting. I'm finding this the conversation fascinating, and it's one of those things where, you know, you start taking a look at the various aspects of who and what we are, human beings versus spiritual beings, and it's sometimes kind of difficult to make the differentiation, and then also to figure out where we're getting this information. I mean, you say that sometimes we can't know somebody else's purpose.
Absolutely not.
So for someone to come up to me and say that God told me to tell you, and I remember saying to someone that, look, God knows where I am. God knows where I am. He can call me collect. I'll accept the charges. I don't need an intermediary. And a lot of people seem to want to do that for others. And then there are times when we seek out individuals to get guidance from.
Absolutely.
How, maybe this is not the right word, but how dangerous is something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've raised a lot of questions there. I mean, one of the things that I talk about is you can't know someone else's purpose, but you can guide them. You can help guide them to it. You can push them in the right direction, often sometimes without even knowing that's what you're doing. When I talk about being a coach or a teacher, I really think a guide is a better metaphor, just not one that's out there and very easily explained. So I do think you can guide, and I think you can help, but you have to be super clear that the messaging coming through you, your intuition, mm-hmm. is free from your own distortions and your own bullshit, basically, and really not share until you are totally sure. And one of the reasons I haven't sort of come out of the closet as a wisdom teacher, if you like, for about a decade after being pretty clear that's what I wanted to do and be, was because I wanted to make sure that I could pull away all the dirt on my lens. And so when the light comes shining through, it's really shining through, and I'm not getting hooked on my own desires and needs and feeling of lack and whatever. And the world's had plenty of spiritual teachers, who have gone off piste and told people to do things that really aren't a part of love, peace, and truth.
Right.
And so I think anyone who's helping people in this most beautiful of work needs to be really clear with themselves that's where it's coming from, and also probably set up some you know, peer review, if you like, to make sure that they don't ever get their ego coming out and saying, you know, I'm your mediary. I'm the messenger for you. Which, you know, our ego loves that stuff. It's like, yeah, brilliant. I'm actually the one, not just one of the ones. I'm the one. And we know what that looks like, you know, when we get out of alignment preachers and gurus sleeping with half their ashrams. So I think that's really important, is, you know, to know you can be a guide, but you're not the messenger per se.
Exactly. I've had some very interesting conversations over the years with people, and some of the conversations have become very personal, very intimate in the respect to trying to sort of vet through all of the information to get to the core of what's really going on with this individual, and where it is that they really want to go, and why they want to go there, and so on and so forth. And I remember a conversation I had with this one woman on the phone who used to call the radio station that I worked for back in Phoenix, and we talked for months. I have a feeling that it might even been a couple of 3 years over the course of time. I never met her personally. She's a young gal searching, but she was also a member of a particular philosophy or belief system. And I remember sharing with her my perspectives, for example, on Adam and Eve from Genesis. And after finishing, she was royally pissed at me for the things that I had said. And yet at the same, as I'm hearing her venting, I'm realizing, oh, now I understand where she's coming from. So of course, when she was finished, I apologized. I didn't mean to be insensitive and so forth, but at least from that point on, I knew where I could go so that I wouldn't offend her, so that at least we could continue our conversation. We even had an interview on this program where I interviewed some folks from a particular philosophy, and I did not announce what that was on the air until the end of the interview, because I wanted people to hear where this philosophy was coming from, what these people really believed. Now, it's entirely up to each individual as to whether or not they choose to go a particular direction. But each one of us, we do choose one, or we choose a multitude of them, sometimes over the course of a lifetime, and sometimes in a collective sense. In other words, you know, right now I may be following 3 or 4 or 5 different philosophies kind of mixed together. I've taken the pieces that I liked that mixed, and it's working for me. But, you know, Nick, I have no desire to create a church and generate followers. It's just where I'm at.
Absolutely. The metaphor I use is, I've got my map. I've worked really hard to get my map together of how I think the world works and how I work in the world. I think the map has value for other people. Otherwise, I wouldn't be out there sharing it. But it's my map. It can't be anyone else's. I can say, look, here's a map that I've been using. You know, check it out. See if it works for you. And if it does, you know, help use it to help build your own map. Because I've done a lot of the grunt work for you. You know, I've crunched through a lot of philosophies, lots of science papers. But everyone has to make their own map. It's one of the most important things to teach people when you're teaching philosophy or wisdom or self-awareness and consciousness, is you've got to not only build your own map, but you've got to own your own map. And I think that's where a lot of people, the religions ultimately are sort of fossilized maps that people have said, you know, this is the map. That's one of the sort of dangers of religion, and what turns a lot of people off. Any of these things that become so concrete, they can't change, they can't adapt, they're not flexible anymore. They're not co-created between the individual and the teaching.
But you also bring up another interesting point, and you have your map. And one of the things I'm starting to realize is that even though it's perfectly acceptable for me to put my map up on the wall and show other people that, hey, these principles, these concepts in my map work for me, there's absolutely no guarantee that they're going to work for anybody else simply because I say they work. They work for me because I've put them together specially designed for me, not for anybody else.
Absolutely.
So then I sit there listening to people complaining about different philosophies, like The Secret and The Law of Attraction and so forth, and people wonder why it's not working. And my conclusion in one sense is, as generalized as they try to make it, maybe, I'm just speculating, maybe that was designed just for one person, the person who found it.
See, it's almost like you've got like a quantum philosophy view that we find the philosophy for us in the universe that sort of emerges for us.
Yeah.
And anyone else will have a different experience. I totally get that. And actually, I think there's something very beautiful in that. I do also sense, and I could be totally wrong, that there are some principles that you find common in many different paths, which have some kind of lasting element of truth. But again, as I think all the great teachers have said, if it isn't working for you, but really not working, don't just chuck it away with the first attempt. If after, you know, some consistent effort, it isn't working for you, then let it go.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a tricky one, because sometimes it may just be that there's just one tiny bit of what you're doing is just out of whack. And then, so the law of manifestation and the law of attraction is one of those things, I think, which it has some principle. There's some principle there, which is, you know, that we can clearly see in the world. But if your reasoning inside, your motivation and your desire is out of alignment with what is your truth, then it just ain't going to happen. And I think, and one of the dangerous things of that manifestation sort of philosophy is that, and I really believe this, is that we don't get to create whatever we want. You know, the universe is way bigger than us, and we get what we are supposed to get. And that may not be just as convenient as the house with the double garage and the five cars and the ski lodge.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be that as part of our life's journey, but we can still make everything meaningful and part of our spiritual exploration. So that's I could get hooked into that conversation for quite some time. Given that a lot of thought. I think particularly The Secret works well in Anglo-Saxon cultures, where there's still this deeper sort of Christian, flavor, mm-hmm. which is, if God loves you, you'll be rich.
Yeah.
Super Protestant sort of prosperity doctrine, as it's been called. So I think it taps into that really well, which is, oh, okay, so if I'm a good person, then I'll be rich in some way. And I just don't know if I just don't personally believe that's the case. You know, wealth is kind of agnostic. You can be thriving and have wealth, and you can be thriving and not have wealth.
True.
And if wealth is really important to you, then go find it. But what most people realize is when you get it, it's not quite what you thought it was going to be. You can't fill the gap on the inside. You can't fill the hole in the inside with anything from the outside. And that's one of the fundamental principles that I work with.
Yeah.
Well,
it is something that I know a lot of us, you know, do struggle with from that standpoint, especially in the West. And, you know, we think that that's the be all and end all in terms of thriving, in terms of success, in terms of happiness and peace and all of those things, is to have a full bank account and all of those other accoutrements that go along with it. And then when we get them, we begin to realize that, oh, gee, that wasn't it. And I think that it's summed up well that stuff from the outside doesn't fill the void that is on the inside. It has to be filled up from the inside.
Absolutely.
By those things that we do find. When we talk about the title of your book, Switch On, usually from a very mechanical perspective, a switch is usually something that in electricity, you know, you flip the switch one way and it opens the circuit and allows the electricity to flow. And when you flip it the other way, it closes the circuit and stops the flow. So when you switch on, what is, first of all, what is this switch shall we say, euphemistically, what's it wired into?
Yes. Well, I guess it's kind of fractal. It's a fractal switch. So it's kind of got different layers, different levels. The ultimate switch, what I call in the book the master switch, is the basic connection to everything else, the universe. You can call it God, Jesus, love, nature, cosmos, the quantum field, whatever language, metaphor, reality that you want it to be. And that's the master switch. So for me, at some point on this journey of purpose and peace and possibility, we have to make a choice, ultimately somewhere. Is the master switch on or off? And the way I talk about it is there some kind of interconnected, intersubjective, interdependent reality about the world? Or are you separate and alone? And there's no meaning and there's nothing ties it all together. And what I think most people do is they want to have it both ways at different times. And I kind of say, well, you can't. It kind of doesn't make sense. So either everything can have meaning, either there's some connection between everything that happens, or you should believe there isn't and experience your life from that way. And as we know from all these things, there's no right or wrong. You know, if you want to believe everything's random and we're disconnected and alone and we're just going to die and it's all quite scary and painful, then fine. Have your master switch off. You know, stay switched off and that's your experience of life. But my experience, having done that for many years as a quite avowed atheist who experienced that life and made lots of money and all those kind of things, I realized it was a one-way trip to constant and debilitating pain and suffering. And so when I talk about switching on, it's about switching back on to that flow, that electricity of life, itself, the basic inherent energy and intelligence and creativity that's in all life.
I'm really intrigued by and enjoying this conversation, which we are going to continue. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Nick Jenkel. He's the author of the book Switch On, How to Ignite Your Creative Spirit with the New Science of Breakthrough. We're going to get into that when we come back from our break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with the author of Switch On, and his name is Nick Jenkel, and we are talking about this whole process of, in a manner of speaking, you know, we're already wired in, but sometimes it requires a little rewiring. Reconnect your heart, rewire your brain, and remix your world, and in a manner of speaking, in that order. And we're talking about this whole aspect, especially when you consider the ramifications of our world today. I was watching a documentary just the other day having to do with, I can't think of a better word to use than social engineering, because that's what it is, which I don't really have a problem with, simply because the presently engineered society in which we live is not working for us real well. It's actually... it's actually killing us as a species, and we continue down this path, and you know, we're worried about the extinction of other species. We may move to the very top of the list if we don't make some radical changes. And I'm not even talking about the issues surrounding the external things that are going on in terms of global change and that type of thing. I'm talking about the stuff that's going on the inside that is being affected by what's going on the outside. I mean, look at, I can't remember, Nick, any time in history, as far as I'm aware, when the health of mankind was at such a sorry state.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really bad.
It's a couple of things that really galvanized me and my work and the wisdom enterprises that I run. Two simple statistics. Depression suicide kills more people every year than war and murder put together. And it's one of the top three killers in the West. And it's the top killer of young guys in America. It's just amazing suicide, more than road traffic accidents. And the second one is depression is diagnosed double in millennials than baby boomers. And it will soon be the number one burden on global health, depression, which, you know, two things which just are totally avoidable in the world, I believe anyway, totally avoidable if we have the right inner life, ultimately. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these aspects to how to ignite your creative spirit with the new science of breakthrough. What is breakthrough? Describe that for us.
Oh, yes. I love breakthrough.
Because it's almost like a trademarked word now of sorts, at least in the context of and Switch On.
Absolutely. So breakthrough for me is any sort of transformational change that couldn't be predicted by the past. Ultimately, so it's anything that doesn't just carry on the way the past has been predicting the future. It's some deviation from that journey, some non-linear shift in how you are in the world, right up to how an organization does its work, which is what people call disruptive innovation, which is an area I work in as well, as teaching wisdom. And so that for me is a breakthrough. But for me, a breakthrough is it almost brings tears to my eyes. For me, it's the kind of ultimate creative act of any human being in a universe that's already insanely creative. I mean, we're a breakthrough. You know, human beings are a breakthrough. But there's something special about it for me, which is I'm going to bring it down to the really like a mundanity. So in the moment that you're with your partner or your colleague or your kids, and you're about to say the same thing you usually say in this slightly tricky situation, and instead you sort of, you know, switch on and do a little thing, and you're like, what can I do to bring more love into this moment rather than react? That, for me, is the entirety of the human spirit expressing itself in the most beautiful, divine, sacred way, just by those tiny breakthroughs. Because it's that's where life counts, in those moments where we can either flip off the switch and go back to how we've been all the time, or we can try out a new creative act, a breakthrough, which may be terrible and it may not work quite how we wanted it to work, but we keep trying, you know, and we keep experimenting. Just like in innovation, the first time you have the idea, it doesn't always work. You try it again, you prototype, you pilot, test things out. So that's what breakthrough means to me. I don't know what something about my purpose is. I've been called to this thing called breakthrough for over 20 years. Like, it's been kind of like my, just the thing that keeps calling me back is, what is a breakthrough? How do you have them? How do you lead them for yourself and others? And I guess above all, how do you sustain them? Because anyone can have a breakthrough. The challenge is continuing it over and over again to sort of embed it in, to rewire it in, rather than just having it and then going, well, that was great, I'm going to go back to how I always was.
Well, and that's the real struggle and the challenge for each one of us. It seems as though, you know, for example, when I take my car into the mechanic and it has a minor problem and they fix it, they put in the new part and everything's working fine for a long time. It's great, no problem. But when we try to do that same kind of thing within ourselves, things don't seem to stick quite as well. I mean, it's like almost like having to, well, maybe even the reality is that we have to keep relearning lessons over and over and over again. And it can be quite fatiguing, both from a spiritual standpoint, let alone a biological, if you will, or physiological standpoint. It's like, my gosh, I keep doing this over and over. When am I going to get over the hump or cross that line to where I don't have to reprocess this stuff?
Absolutely. When it becomes embedded and embodied, that's the key. There's a kind of moment, I think, where the weight of, and I mean this quite literally, the weight of neural wiring has shifted from the old to the new. But that can be months or years of having to remember consciously, oh, I don't react this way anymore. Oh, okay. Or, oh, I don't feel scared in these moments anymore. Oh, I forgot. Because that old wiring is still there, ready to be activated at any moment. I took a little, I try to liken it to a road. So, you know, you grow up 20, 30 years of reacting a certain way to some part of life. And so the nervous pattern you have, the neural signature for that is like an 8-lane superhighway pouring through, you know, the Central Valley. This new little breakthrough idea experience you've had is like a little goat track on the mountain. And it's so therefore the weight of probability is the next time you have the same situation, you're probably going to go back to the 8-lane superhighway because it's a more efficient, you know, neural pathway. And that's why it takes so much micro self-management and rigor. Spirituality takes so much rigor. People think it's the easy way out. It's not. It takes so much focus and hard work, you know, and the what used to be the 8-lane superhighway has become a goat track, which means it's not there very often. But, and here's the beautiful thing I think about life, it can always be triggered again. You know, you're tired, you're exhausted, things have not gone well for a while, you're hungry, etc., etc. And even if you spent 20 years reacting in a most beautiful, loving way to something, that original reaction, that anger or fear or shutting down can still be triggered. And so the work's never done, I believe. And no matter what any guru tells you, I think the work is never done. The switching on is something it's the choice all the time. Do I switch on? Do I switch off?
I know that going through personal growth and development programs, as I did in the 80s and 90s, one of the first reactions that I had in my first session was, when are these people going to get it? Intellectually, I understand. Yeah, exactly. And once I realized what I had just thought, it sunk in, I realized I wasn't talking about them anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny when in those sort of encounter groups, is you're hearing someone just resist. You're like, dude, do me a favor, just get with the program because you're boring us all. But the irony is, we've all got blind spots.
Yeah.
And that's the joy, is we've all got blind spots. They're all things that we just cannot see. And that's why I'm a great fan of conscious relationships, conscious parenting, conscious friendships, because those are the people that we bring in and basically say, here's permission to always show me my blind spots.
Yeah.
So, you know, thanks very much for being my guru.
Exactly. And the thing about that is that at least from that standpoint, as we begin to open our own eyes to really, in a manner of speaking, our own wisdom that's there within us. I mean, I used to, from time to time, I used to go to people, intuitives and so forth, and get some kind of guidance. I have a dear friend who is a Vedic astrologer, and he's got a chart and so forth and gives me information every so often. But I've turned that from, please tell me what I need to know, to, would you please give me some outside confirmation of what I already know, but because I have a little bit of insecurity about this.
Absolutely.
And that's the way I look at it now.
Absolutely. I mean, I use the same thing in the book. I talk about the fact that our friends are really good at giving us feedback on whether what we're saying is our intuition is actually our intuition. Because intuition doesn't shift in the sands depending on who says what. It just gets stronger. Mm-hmm. So you can test it out through other people, whether that's astrologer, coaching, whoever it is. You can test out your own hunches, your own sort of beginnings of an insight into your own innate wisdom. But the wisdom is always within. There's a great quote by Bodhidharma, the first Zen Buddhist patriarch, who said something on the lines of, "Only fools look outside. The Buddha, the sage, is within." And it really is. And that's one of the most important things for people to realize, is people like me and you, we can help, we can guide, we can cajole, we can push, we can encourage, we can love, we can do all these wonderful things. But ultimately, it's always within. The answer's always within and have to be within.
Yeah, and I've quoted this poem on a number of occasions from the author's name is Tiberius. The poem that I will not recite word for word, but paraphrase, the gods are debating over how they're going to hide the secrets of becoming like them from man. And they debate as to where to hide it. And they talk about hiding it in the mountaintops. No, he'll find a way to climb it. Depths of the ocean. No, he'll find a way to get down there. And on and on. And they've got five or six or seven or eight different possibilities. Till finally, they decide, I know where we'll hide it. We'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there.
I love it.
Help me to define the difference from your perspective, Nick, between the heart and that still small voice or intuition or gut feeling.
So, it's a great, great question of the age. By answering it, I'm going to talk about the distinctions I make, because it's something that I've really worked hard on. Because intuition, everyone knows that intuition is awesome and it rocks. And when it really is clear, then it turns into wonderful choices, etc. So most people know that. The challenge is, not only have we hit that intuition in our heart, but we've also then covered it up with what I would call instinct. All this sort of fighting desire to survive, which we need. We need that instinct. We need to be able to avoid burns and snakes and, eat food and forage and fornicate. But that voice of instinct within us is very loud, and it's very hard to hear the intuition, which is much quieter, whilst it's raging around going, have this, need that, want that, take that. So when we do this and start listening to our heart, and that's why we have to heal really before we get to hear intuition, because all the pain and suffering we've had rages around in our instincts, and it's very hard to hear intuition. So that's why I think the work of doing the daily healing of all these little wounds and disappointments takes so much time, because until the heart is healed, at least a certain amount, the intuition can't be, that still small voice can't be heard, because it's small, right? And it's still. But here's the thing that I think is important, is you can tell whether it's intuition or instinct, because instinct is very shouty, but it doesn't often stay the same. It's always changing, because it's always grasping for something to save it, to protect us. But intuition, that still small voice of calm, the voice of the universe within us, doesn't change. It's always there going, no, you need to do this. No, you need to do this. And it just tells us the same thing over and over again. I'm not sure if there's a distinction between the heart and this still small voice. I think the heart speaks of that voice. I think it's the access point to it, ultimately.
It's interesting that I have conversed with people about this specifically in terms of the still small voice, because I've always said, this is why I bring this up, I've always said that if you listen to and follow the promptings of the still small voice, it will never ever lead you astray. It will never take you into harm's way. It may challenge you for lessons you need to learn, but it's not going to take you to the edge of literally of a cliff and tell you to jump. But see, that's where someone said to me, yeah, but people, there are some people who have all kinds of voices going on into their head or what have you. And how do you make that distinction? And so that's when we started talking about, for example, the power of the heart, what the heart really is, and so on and so forth. And so now I'm kind of wondering, okay, well, what's the difference between the two, and which one can we genuinely trust to guide us along our way and on our path, if we're really genuinely trying to build that jigsaw puzzle we call the map?
Yes, absolutely. And back to that, to talk about purpose. I mean, purpose is really the still small voice expressing how we should be in any moment, really. I mean, that's the same. It's the same thing within us. And so, I mean, that's why I think I believe spirituality can't really be fully harnessed in without psychology. We need both of them. We need help with all this psychological wounding in order to get into the spiritual voice, spiritual intuition that we all have access to. Both have to be at work. I talk about my sort of metaphor of that is that psychology is like the bread of a sandwich. It fills us up and it helps us deal with our hunger, but it's missing the filling, the beautiful, tasty awesomeness.
Mm-hmm.
But all filling on its own doesn't make our life work very well. If that's the whole problem with a lot of the spiritual seeking, is if we just search for the spiritual without dealing with our wounding and our patterns and our belief systems, we often end up in difficult places because we can't hear the voice, because there's too much raging of the instinct to hear the intuition. And so we need the full sandwich to really get the thrivadelic, thrivalicious life that I think everyone yearns for.
Well, thriving to me is the ultimate, because that is where we really do live out our life's purpose. We feel that our lives truly do have meaning. That was one of the things that struck me so interestingly years ago, is, you know, that I said, and this would be a good a place to sort of jump into. I don't know that I know why I have this feeling inside that my life has meaning. I just know that I do, and I know that it does.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like I can't justify it to you or anybody else. All I know is that there's something inside of me that says that my life is not about raping, pillaging, and plundering for the sake of raping, pillaging, and plundering.
Mm-hmm.
That there's more to this existence, as far as I'm concerned, than that. And so when I start talking with people about them, you know, having, you know, life having meaning, and I start taking a look at what's going on around in the world, there, believe it or not, from a more of an intellectual perspective, Nick, I start to wonder, you know, what is the point when we have all of this utter chaos going on that just seems to continually be perpetuated over and over again, and there doesn't seem to be any end to it?
Yeah, it's very easy to lose hope when we look around and to be, I guess, bewildered by the suffering. I mean, just the intense suffering everywhere.
Mm.
And yet all it takes is, the sun hitting a flower or a smile of a child to remember, this is what's on offer. This is the beauty that's on offer. I think the word thriving for me is quite important. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything is working out, but it means that we are able to engage fully with it and bring meaning to it. And the work of Viktor Frankl has been very influential in my life. I'm actually a grandchild of Holocaust survivors. And his basic premise is, you know, you can take away everything from a human being aside from their ability to create meaning in situations and serve other people with that meaning and bring some love, truth, creativity to a moment, even if it's as dark as Auschwitz. Is you can bring that light into those situations, and not in a kind of cheesy, self-helpy way, but in a very literal, you know, would you like my piece of bread? And, you know, would you like a hug? Here's a smile. You know, these are these little things that we can do to bring that meaning. But it's challenging. I mean, you know, I work in social enterprise, I work in social change, and I see some heartbreaking things. But that's the call. The heartbreak is the call, and purpose comes out of that heartbreak. I think it's very hard to find your purpose until you've actually suffered or seen suffering, because the suffering is what helps us switch on. And that's actually a beautiful Sufi quote saying, which is the heart is awakened by a blow. So it's our suffering that triggers us to say, you know what, I've got to bring more meaning in. I've got to take this life and do something with it, as you say, that is inherently more meaningful than maybe what I've been doing, the raping and the pillaging and the plundering,
mm-hmm.
or whatever version of that we are doing.
Yeah. I've been watching a series from the National Geographic's channel on the Vikings.
Mm.
Very interesting. And again, I don't know how true they are, I'm hoping that they're fairly true to some historical evidence that we have of these people. In terms of obviously, we're very much aware of their brutality. I mean, the Irish can attest to that fact as well as others. But there are some moments when there's actually a certain level of love and compassion and understanding. It's far and few between, but nonetheless, every once in a while. And I know that there's the argument, there's the conversation surrounding being a product of one's environment or one's genes, one's DNA, if you will, one's ancestry. And in a manner of speaking, I have to, you know, when you look at it from a more broad perspective, you know, your environment, well, how far back you want to go with your environment? I mean, it depends upon your definition of that word. But we're a product of everything that is about who and what we are here in the present moment as well as the past.
Absolutely.
So in terms of, I mean, let me rephrase that question. Can we escape those aspects, if you will, of our ancestry?
I think we can. I think most of the great teachers, wisdom teachers of the ancients certainly did escape. So the stories of Jesus and the stories of the Buddha and some of the Indian princes are all stories of saying, actually, I don't want this life. Whether they're literal or metaphorical, who knows? But they're all stories of saying there is something more. And I'm going to go and find what it is, whether that's sitting in the desert or sitting under a tree. And I'm going to experience the truth of my interconnectedness at some point. And I believe we all have that option. We all have the option of breaking out of the culture that we've grown up in. And that's not to say it's easy. And that's not to say that it's, I don't believe in the kind of hit you over the head, why aren't you better than you are type path of transformation. Mm-hmm. We have to, I believe, come to with total empathy for people's nature and nurture and where they're at in that moment. And it's not always that easy to break out of these cycles. Ancestral pain, ancestral patterns, the patterns that come from our religion and upbringing and teaching and all this stuff, they are hard. They're hard wired in conditioning. But given that, still, we can still, with reflection, with some form of reconnection of our heart, we can break out. I know I have. So I know that it can be done from my point of view. And I believe I've seen it in other people that I've spent time with and guided and helped. But it's one of the great challenges of life is to truly thrive, we have to break out. That's the bottom line. And that's what breakthrough is. You know, it's constant breaking outs of our what predictably would have happened given our culture and our teaching and our education.
It's very interesting to look at these aspects from both a metaphysical or philosophical perspective, and then try to put them into more practical applications. And obviously that's where some of these encounter groups that I participated in the 80s and 90s are all about. Although I would say that in one sense we're we're participating in an encounter group even as we're going through our daily lives, because absolutely, there can be some moments when things happen and we're then put in a position to either react as we always have or come up with a new way of addressing that, I'll call it challenge. It's really an opportunity. I mean, we've talked quite often, for example, with astrologers, and they'll use this phrase, Mercury is in retrograde. And of course, shivers go up and down the spine of some people. Go, oh no, my God, what are we going to do? It's the end of the world kind of thing. You know, that's the way they look at it. But there's one astrologer I've talked with who he says that the way she looks at it, it's an opportunity for self-observation. Puts absolutely a whole different twist on it. So when those challenges come up, whether somebody cuts you off on the road or something goes wrong at work, or you're having a challenge with a relationship that you're in, family, wife, husband, kids, what have you. Even the dogs or cats, you know, it's an opportunity to see, okay, well, where is this coming from?
Absolutely. I mean, my book, actually, the process that the book describes or shares starts with problems. It doesn't, you know, so my kind of thing around thriving is, it's not about thriving despite problems and issues, it's because of them. We're all going to have stuff happen to us in our life. The one thing we know we're going to have is that we're going to die, right? And it could well be painful, and other people are going to die around us that we love. So if that's the only thing that happens, we know we're going to have that. But we're probably going to have lots of other things happen as well that we wouldn't ideally choose. But those are the moments of the biggest breakthroughs, because those are the moments where the existing sort of matrix is broken, and there's new light, new growth can come through in a way that it can't when everything's okay. When we're comfortable and it's all working well, we tend not to have that many breakthroughs because we're just carrying on enjoying this moment. And so when there's a schism in the field around us, which we experience as a problem or a challenge, and we call it that, what it's really saying to us is, here's an opportunity to bring another part of our potential out that isn't fully developed. So it might be surrender, it might be devotion, it might be love, it might be self-love, it might be confidence, whatever it is. The problem is only a problem because of some part of us that's not fully developed. And that's really what these breakthroughs are about, is about growing that part of us up, if you like, inside, and bringing whatever the breakthrough is into our life. Because of the problem. The problem is the awakening. It's the start of the process.
That's an interesting word too, awakening. I mean, we're talking about the thing that I find so interesting is this. I'm going to use the term that's on the front of the book: rewire your brain. And in a manner, well, maybe not in a manner of speaking, quite literally, that's what we do when we stop and say, okay, where's this coming from? As Absolutely. Opposed to in the past, we just react.
Absolutely. We literally, it's literally every time we create something new with our being, whether it's a literal creation, a painting, or whether it's a new way of speaking or feeling about something, we literally send a new set of signals through our nervous system, and that creates a link, a wiring, a pattern. And so it very much is rewiring on a very daily micro moment basis that we're going in. And the thing is, everyone wants the rewiring. And what I've learned is, until we do the reconnecting of the heart, the rewiring doesn't work very well. So, the bigger the conditioned response, the reaction, the more it sabotages us, the more it's a habit that stops us thriving, the deeper it's lodged into the heart. And the shift can only begin in the heart. And I believe from the research I've done that you can actually see the physiological version of that, which is when we're scared, when we're in stress, when we're in fear, our nervous system literally tightens up. It focuses just on the most used pathways, and we get tunnel vision, tunnel memory. We're just not creative. We're not open. And it's only by relaxing and reconnecting and remembering what's possible and who we really are that we can create the solvent we need to liquefy the old patterns and start building new ones. And then the emotion of love then helps us speed up the rewiring process, because wiring happens through emotion. And whether it's fear when we're younger, or whether it's love once we switch on, the wiring occurs through emotion. And so you can get to choose to stay in the old emotions, painful emotions, or choose love ultimately.
We're talking with Nick Jankel. He's the author of Switch On, and it is about how to ignite your creative spirit with the new science of breakthrough. And fascinating stuff, I have to say, because it's where we're at right now. As a matter of fact, it's always easy to look back and see the pathways that we've been down, both Absolutely. As a society as well as individuals. What is it they say? Hindsight is 20/20.
Absolutely.
If only we had foresight that was 2020. Sometimes I wonder if foresight is 2400. I used to have 2400 in my left eye and could barely see where I was going. But I see how we traveled from the 60s and what that represented into the 70s with disco and all of that that represented it. And then into the 80s, we began the process of more consciously of personal transformation. However, we were blaming the outside world for all of our problems that we would transform from. And it was in the 90s that I noticed that we began the process of starting to look inward and saying, you know what? It is not about them. No, my mother is not to be at fault. My brothers and sisters, my school classmates, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's not them. It's me. And we're carrying on that process, but on a deeper level here, especially with what you're doing.
Exactly.
In terms of, because you made an interesting observation near the beginning of the program where you don't want to be, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I'm remembering correctly, you don't want to be somebody's guru, maybe, period. You don't want to be, at end of story. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, somebody, you know, wanted you to be their guru. You want to make sure that you're clean and clear and you've got all your ducks in a row, if you will, okay? Or your switch is on at least 90% of the time.
Absolutely.
Before you start to guide someone in any way, shape, or form. With that being said, what is your best advice and guidance to someone who wants to be of service, let's just say for the sake of argument, in that context, okay? Mm-hmm. Switch on would be the first best step for them to begin this process?
To awaken, to reconnect, to really get a sense of I am part of this one cosmos and experience that and to experience it so that the connection is really strong. And that's probably the most important thing is whatever you do, whether it's Qigong, yoga, meditation, tantric, you know, sexy vibes, whatever it is that you, when you feel that connection most strong, just do lots of it. Because the more you open up the channel and the stronger the connection, the less chance it disconnects in the very moment when you're guiding someone. Now I have my own practices. For example, if I'm coaching or doing a workshop, I don't drink the night before, just to make sure I'm not slightly off, you know, skew with. I always have a little pre-game ritual around devotion, around saying this is not about me. I'm not the guru. I'm just devoting my life in service to this person and whatever's meant to occur will occur and letting go of it needing to be the most amazing session and, you know, all that ego stuff. That's the stuff that gets in the way. And so there are some nice thrive hacks, as I call them, to get out of that. And devotion for me is a big one. And then practice. And I guess there's a lot of impatience in the world. And I was very impatient myself. And I, but there's something very beautiful about taking your time and not feeling like you have to get out there and be of service in the biggest way possible right now. And practice and practice and practice. I mean, my book took me almost 10 years to write. And through that time, I've been really practicing. And now I can actually be here centered and grounded and say I can be of service in most situations. And I'll tell you if I'm not, I'll tell you if I can't be.
Well, I have to tell you, I have to tell you that it doesn't give me a great deal of encouragement regarding your book because I've been working on mine since 2001 and it's smaller than yours. but then again, I don't know that it's more, I don't know if that has to do much with procrastination and more to do with, less to do with patience, more to do with procrastination. But I know that it's all about choice too. And we talk about that here on the program. We provide choices and knowledge of those choices to help people's dreams come true. But I think what it comes down to also is, you know, what you touched upon this earlier in the program too, in terms of our hearts, our desires. And I remember there's even a biblical passage talking about one's heart's desires as opposed to one's ego desires. Big difference.
Absolutely.
And in terms of wanting to be of service, it's interesting how we have different examples of that in our own lives where we try. We really do. I remember years ago wanting to assist people in their projects. You know, they wanted to record a program. They wanted to record whatever it was that they wanted to produce. I knew they didn't have a lot of money, but I had to charge something because, you know, I felt my services were worth something. So I would charge them what I charged them. And some people would tell me, oh, you're undercharging yourself. You're really cutting yourself short. And I said, well, I have a choice. I can either charge them what I think I should be charged and not get the work and make nothing, or I can assist them in producing what it is that they want to get their message out and get something.
Mm.
And I actually chose the latter most every single time until I got to a point, and it was here in Santa Barbara, actually, where I live now, where I set a rate. And I remember somebody asked me, well, so what do you charge? And I said it and kind of cringed a little bit waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak. And then, okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point I realized that no matter what my rate is, I'm going to be okay with that.
Mm.
Because I'm still going to be in service to these people. There's always a way to make some of these things come about. So I've been involved in some very interesting projects and different things, and I'm excited about having done that. And of course, the future, you know, is wide open. But I think that a lot of times we sell ourselves short. We don't think that we're worth it, and so we don't, we won't say this is what I'm worth. Because I mean, you can always negotiate down. There's nothing wrong with that either, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Nick, before we wrap up the program, first of all, I want to thank you so much for joining us here, and also want to extend an open invitation to you. If you do find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Fab. I'm actually going to be in Santa Barbara in about 3 weeks. So
well, I'll tell you what, we'll have you in again, and we'll would love to do that. If you have the time, we'll make it happen.
Great.
Before we wrap up, I have three final questions for you. Number one, who is Nick Jenkel?
Oh, my Lord. That's a question I ask myself pretty much every day. I guess a kind of assorted collection of personalities and ideas and truths. But my deepest core is just one part of the great symphony of life, attempting to bring more love, truth, and creativity into the world in the ways that I've been given that I happen to be good at, with as little ego and fear and limit as possible.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, this is where I get to be really ambitious and totally unattached whether this occurs or not. But I would like to switch on literally millions of people's hearts to what's possible when they switch on themselves and reconnect their heart and help this palpable, almost, you know, this spiritual revolution that I think everyone can feel in some way in every country I visit. I just want to be part of being one of the leaders who help that come to fruition in our lifetime.
And finally, who inspires you?
Oh, my God. Pretty much everyone, all the time. I've been inspired by this phone call, this conversation. It's fabulous. Human beings are insane. They're amazing. I mean, people just can surprise us in these tiny ways. Like, wow, you do that? Or you this is what you do in your spare time? My two kids, my two little boys I've got, who just blow my mind with what they can invent. They're so unattached and so unconditioned that they just create all the time. My wife is an insane healer, blows my mind what she can do. So basically everyone's inspiring me all the time, and the world, nature, everything, the whole thing.
Well, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here and sharing your time and your story with us, as well as your book, Switch On, How to Ignite Your Creative Spirit with the New Science of Breakthrough. Nick Jankel, thank you again for joining us. And yeah, we look forward to talking with you in studio.
Thank you so much, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.